The Spinoff Podcast Network. Skinny are helping you show how smart you are with the 1Q Quiz, an all-new, super challenging and super quick daily quiz built by The Spinoff. Every Monday, Skinny are giving you the chance to prove you're smart with the Skinny Extra Credit question. Get it right, and you'll get the chance to score yourself some Skinny Extra mobile credit so you can text, call, or even video call your group chat and gloat about how big your brain is. T's and C's apply.
When the Facts Change is brought to you by the Spinoff Podcast Network, in partnership with KiwiBank, the bank for Kiwi looking to get ahead in business and in life, a bank that delivers expertise and banking know-how, smart advice for business owners wanting to invest, grow their business, or diversify, a bank that adapts with technology through the lens of its people and customers. It is a bank with heart that is driven by its purpose, Kiwi making Kiwi better off. I grew up on a dairy farm, and one of the things I used to love doing was washing down the yard in the milking shed. So this is an awful lot of basically poo on a concrete floor, and I'd wash it down with this high-powered hose. It was actually a lot of fun for a 9-10-year-old. And one thing I used to notice whenever I did it was how big the roof was on the milking shed, and it was just pure corrugated iron. And I got to thinking one day when I heard, as a 9 or 10-year-old, about these amazing new things called solar panels that could generate electricity. And I got to thinking, and then I forgot. And a good 50 years later or so, I started thinking again about those milking sheds and those big, wide expanses of corrugated iron, and knowing that milking sheds use a lot of power. Those machines pumping the milk around and sucking it out use a lot of power. And it's expensive to get it to farms. And then there's the trucks who come and suck the milk out of the tanks and take it back to the factory to then turn into milk powder with coal. This is one of the risks for New Zealand. One of our major export products is very energy intensive. And there's a lot of coal and a little bit of gas used in there to generate the electricity producing all that milk. So then I thought, here's an idea for Fonterra. Why doesn't Fonterra pay for every one of its dairy farmers to put panels on those big roofs with a battery, generate a lot of their own electricity, and then use it to run their milking sheds, put a line up to the house, and then use it to charge the milk trucks as they go past every single farm and suck in the milk and suck in some power with it to move that truck around. Fonterra is one of the biggest organisations in New Zealand with the ability to do things quickly and to have a balance sheet. It's that sort of opportunity that is now opening up as the cost of panels and batteries slump. This week on When the Facts Change, I speak to Mike Casey, the CEO of Rewiring Aotearoa, about the electrification tipping point, that moment when the cost of generating power and storing it in the panels and the batteries on your own roof suddenly mean it makes sense to do everything yourself, without a resource consent, without huge amounts of capital, multi-decade-long resource consent processes. What if New Zealand was able to electrify one roof at a time? This week on When the Facts Change, we talk about the electrification tipping point with Mike Casey from Rewiring Aotearoa. Well, kia ora, and welcome again to When the Facts Change to Mike Casey, the CEO of Rewiring Aotearoa. Mike, lovely to see you again from deep in the cherry-growing part of the South Island.
Thank you for having me on once again. I obviously made a good enough impression that I was invited back, so I'm very thrilled to be here.
Well, luckily you come bearing gifts, a really chunky report on electric homes, the energy, economic, and emissions opportunity of electrifying New Zealand's homes and cars. This is a a deeply researched report into the costs and the mechanics of rewiring our homes, putting on solar panels, replacing gas, charging our electric cars at homes or at home, all of the nitty-gritty of how it's done. So I'm curious about how this could work and, you know, from a brutal consumer's point of view, is it cheaper for me to electrify my home than it is to just do nothing?
That's the really exciting part of all of this. What we refer to in the report is the economic tipping point of electrification. And what that means now, I think the best way of describing it is not only electrifying your home and the vehicle that you drive is good for emissions, but in the long run, it's actually far better for your wallet. And that's not just the operational savings that you make, but it also includes the capital costs of buying new electric machinery. So that's what we've tried to identify in this report and share with people. I'm really excited to sort of be sharing this with you today and to your listeners because obviously your listeners are, you know, they're very sort of sophisticated listeners that will dive into this in great detail. And what it really does prove is that New Zealand is ready to go on this. And with not only that, we're probably the first country in the world that has truly reached this tipping point for three reasons. One, we have really good sunlight hours, which means we can generate the solar that we need for our homes. The second is we actually have a really good electricity system already. It's got its faults, don't get me wrong, but in general, we've got, you know, Australia looks at us and really is jealous of our hydroelectric system that we have in this country. But the most important thing of all is that we pay more for fossil fuels as New Zealand customers than any other person in the world. It's a significant aspect which makes it economical now for us to pretty much electrify millions of small fossil fuel machines in New Zealand, where the decision of the fate of those fossil machines will be decided around the dinner table and not the boardroom table.
That's the irony, isn't it? And overseas, governments often subsidise fuel for cooking, for driving. If you're a car driver in Saudi Arabia, it's not very expensive to fill your tank. And that's the, you know, the painful thing of this global challenge is so many governments actually subsidise the use of fossil fuels. If only they switched the subsidies to electric, it would make a huge difference. But because our government doesn't subsidise the use of fossil fuels to the consumer, you could argue there's some other subsidies inherent in how we do things for others. But that means, you're right, there's a high cost of just sticking with what we've got. I just wondered if we could break down the, you know, what needs to be replaced, what you replace it with, and how much savings you get. Because you've gone through the exercise of working out, for example, for a house that has a petrol vehicle and LPG appliances, the current cost is around $19,000 a year. And if you simply had gas appliances rather than LPG, so you're off mains gas and you had a petrol vehicle, your costs are over $18,000. How much would it cost for servicing the interest costs on the capital to replace that goes gas appliances, obviously replace your car, put in the solar panels and do whatever else is necessary? Are you able to break it down?
I think the first thing that we have really paid attention to is defining what a fully electric home is. And that fully electric home is six different machines that you run in your home. All right, and those six different machines are the cars that we drive and the way that we get around. That's a dinner table decision. Just like how we cook our food, just like how we heat our water, and just like how we heat our homes. But with that comes two new machines available to the customer that have had significant rollout in Australia but have not had significant rollout in New Zealand yet. And we hope this report is really going to change that. And that is rooftop solar and also battery backups within the home. So that's what makes a fully electric home. And what this report has done is it's almost like the best way to explain this would be if you're starting with a new build home, right, and you're buying all six of these machines up front, you will never, ever be better off again buying fossil fuel machines over their electric equivalents. But not everyone is in the position where they're building a new home and making those decisions up front, right? You've probably got you're probably somewhere along that journey to complete electrification. You might have gas for hot water, but you might electric heat or, you know, something to that effect. You might cook with induction, you might cook with resistive electric, or you might still cook with gas. The main point then is that at some point, those machines are going to need to be replaced, all right? The average lifetime of those machines, when you sort of average it out, and there's a lot of nuance to that, is around about 15 years, which means half of all the gas water heaters in New Zealand are going to need to be replaced in the next 7 years, which really aligns with what we need to do for our 2030 Paris commitments. Mm. So therefore, all we need to do is say to everyone in New Zealand needs to understand that the next time I need to make a dinner table machine purchase, I buy the electric version over the fossil fuel version. What we really do, and I think this is sort of a bit of anecdotal evidence from my own experience, is that sometimes we're in a position where we electrify all the machines in our home. And when we electrify all the machines in our home, the payback on solar and batteries gets significantly better because we're self-consuming a huge amount of the electricity that we generate ourselves. But bearing in mind, different people will go on different journeys. And one of the most fascinating things I've found so far is I've met people from across the political spectrum who really understand this and get this. It doesn't matter if you're quite left-leaning, quite right-leaning, quite climate-focused, not climate-focused. If you have solar panels on your roof, you get this argument. And so one of the key things I think from this is that, and what I'm trying to portray to the listeners here, is that it might be a case that you are replacing a fossil fuel machine first, and that's cool. It might be that you want to put solar panels on the roof first before you do anything else. And that's also cool. Everyone's on their own journey. You've got six decisions to make. And our goal really now at Rewiring Aotearoa, our kaupapa, is to figure out how to make those six decisions easy for everyone. Because that's the problem at the moment. It's not easy for everyone.
Yeah, let's go through those six decisions then. I can think of a few off the top of my head, but can you list those six decisions and where we are in Aotearoa in terms of what's easiest to make? We've got the systems in place, we've got the education there, we've got the suppliers, the installers, you know, all the machinery around helping us slide through and make that decision easily, the nudges in various places, the grease that make things happen quickly. Where are we with those six decisions?
So I think the first one is probably around how we heat our homes. And how we heat our homes is generally one of the more expensive things that we will do in our homes. But all this is nuanced. All of this is incredibly nuanced because the more people you have in the home, the more people that are there to share the heat pump. Still the same amount of energy, that all more people are warm. The more people you have in the home, the more showers you have, the much higher your water bill is, right? So that's the important thing. And we've done what we think is the average household in New Zealand in this report, but we've also done a whole bunch of scenarios on people with, you know, four children, people living in Dunedin, people living in Auckland, rural people, that kind of thing, to give a really good indication. And one of the key things that we're looking at doing next is sort of, can we build out an actually really useful calculator for an individual household to see what is the best pathway to save money if I'm replacing the stuff decision by decision. But the six decisions are how we drive, how we get around, and so that is essentially electric vehicles, how we heat our water, how we heat our living rooms and the rest of our homes, how we cook our food, and how we generate our own electricity and self-absorb it, and what do we do with that surplus electricity? Well, we can store that in a battery and use it later for a bit of our own resilience. So those are the sorts of parts that we're looking at.
Because one of the interesting changes in the last few years, and sometimes it's hard to change people's preconceptions, because 10 years ago when people were looking, when we first started to hear about solar panels and the move to going fully electric, people would look at the cost of the panels and the batteries and it just seemed out of whack with the costs of just doing nothing. And for a lot of people, they looked at it once and it would seem too expensive and they were told, you know, it's going to take a decade or two before things have changed to the point where it actually makes sense. However, coming back to it a few years on, it seems like the curve has steepened. The drop in the cost of panels, the drop in the cost of batteries, the drop in the costs of cars, the improvement in the features of the cars, the features of the batteries,
yep.
seems to have happened faster than we expected. Could you talk a bit more about that?
Oh, and it all comes down to purely the economies of scale of the manufacturing of the stuff. It has just become cheaper. And I'll give you a really good anecdotal example of when I put batteries on my farm, I paid $1,300 a kilowatt hour for my batteries in 2019. Quite expensive. This year I bought an electric tractor and I paid $1,300 a kilowatt hour for the batteries and I got a free tractor.
Ah.
That is just how remarkable this is. The cheapest batteries in New Zealand at the moment are probably in a Tesla Model Y. But that being said, I'm saying that from stuff I learned a few months ago. I saw a quote the other day coming out of a solar installer for batteries at $700 a kilowatt hour, which is nearly half of what I paid for them in 2019. And these are real quotes that people are forwarding us, right? I'm seeing solar panels at half the price that I would have paid for them in 2019. And so this isn't just modeling on a spreadsheet of what we expect the price to be. This is actually what the price is now. And most of that has come from economies of scale. And one of the things that we're also really starting to see now is that things like electric vehicles, things like hot water, we're starting to be able to use them in ways that we've never been able to use them before. Now, the first is the best and cheapest way that you can, the cheapest energy in human history is rooftop solar. It's about 6 cents a kilowatt hour when you annualize the capital cost over its lifetime, right? The average punter in New Zealand, the average customer is now paying 34 cents a kilowatt hour from the grid, right? So it is an absolute remarkable savings opportunity.
Wow, that's a huge gap. It's like this, you know, if you're in a financial trading mindset, that's like a huge arbitrage opportunity there.
It's like a huge
low-hanging fruit that you just need to grab it to get those savings.
That's it. And I think the thing is that at the moment, the market is not set up for us to do anything but benefit from the self-consumption of our solar. Now, what I've always said is the cheapest energy you're ever going to get, Bernard, is electricity from your own roof. The second cheapest energy should be the energy from your neighbor, but your neighbor will sell it back to the grid at an abysmal feedback tariff that is just insulting, and you will buy it. And in that, when you purchase it, will include national transmission and distribution charges associated with it as though the electrons went all the way up the country and back down again to come to your neighbor. And I think the key thing here is the physics of it. It doesn't work like that. The physics of it is if you generate power on your roof that you don't need, those electrons will almost certainly end up going through one of your neighbor's meters. It's very unlikely that it will go much further than that. And so I think that's a really sort of, you know, really prudent point to understand. Now, we don't have an energy system at the moment that allows us to share electricity, and that's something that we really need to work on. Again, you know, that's our co-pupper. So we have to focus on what is the best thing that we can do for our households with the rooftop solar that we do have while we wait for the system and the policy and everything to catch up. And the two best places to put that surplus power are into your electric vehicle, because you're going to use that energy eventually, and also to make sure that you heat that hot water during your solar window, right? So when you literally overclock the hot water cylinder, bring it up to 75, 80 degrees, and then turn it off when the solar stops going. And there's very complex solutions out there to this, but you could go buy a power switch from Mitre 10 for $10 and do the same thing, right? And just make sure that you're always hitting your power during the solar window. And if you can get access to a retailer's hour of free power, make sure that hour of free power is included in that, you know, in that timer. And you should be able to run your hot water without having to buy much in the way of electricity from the grid at all. Now, that's obviously going to have some seasonal variance and all that kind of thing, but that is the second best way that you can save money over the electric vehicle.
So that's a bit like treating your hot water heater as an electric battery. It's just a battery with water instead of lithium ion or whatever it is you've got in the battery.
A thermal battery. And this is why you now clearly understand why heating hot water with any form of fossil fuel is completely undermining the ability for you to get the payback on your solar. And this is why, like a fully electric home, while we do it machine by machine, you can see that there is clearly, that it's far greater than the sum of its parts.
When the Facts Change is brought to you in partnership with KiwiBank to help you understand the issues affecting the economy. And that's what their team of experts is here to do too. Here's KiwiBank's chief economist, Jared Kerr, on what's happening with inflation in 2024.
Globally, inflation rose to really high levels. We saw inflation averaging over 10% last year. Now central banks have reacted. They've tightened monetary policy. They've lifted interest rates to levels where it hurts. We've seen growth slow down and we're seeing inflation coming off, which is great news because we import a lot of inflation from the rest of the world, and that imported inflation is easing. So half the job that we're trying to do locally is being done for us offshore. The other half, the domestic bit, well, that's the tough bit. That's the sticky inflation that's coming out of our housing market. It's coming out of construction. It's coming out of service industries, and it's going to be hard to contain.
Visit kiwibank.co.nz to stay up to date with detailed economic analysis and forecasts from Jared and other KiwiBank experts. They take big issues from both here and overseas and make them relevant to Kiwi businesses.
Raising capital or taking your business to the world? Investment Fix has the lowdown on everything you need to make it happen. This season, we're exploring the US market, the opportunities it offers, what it takes to grow a business there, and the best way to approach investors. Join some of the superstars of the investment and business world as they share advice from their time in the US so you can make your mahi count in this massive market. The Investment Fix podcast, brought to you by Invest New Zealand. Tune in today.
So with the microeconomics from a household consumer point of view being absolutely clear now, it's not even close, shouldn't we just, you know, let the market reign? We don't have to do anything now. We just let the normal mechanics of businesses who see an opportunity for a profit start selling these things, competing against each other, competing down the prices, building scale so that they can install them cheaper and cheaper and cheaper per kilowatt hour. And the government can just get out of the way and this will solve itself.
Yep. I think the biggest feedback we've had from our report is fantastic. You've highlighted the economic benefit from doing this. This is great. The issue, there's two issues there. One, the first one is that what this report goes into and says is that even when you finance the upfront capital cost at 5.5%, that is still cheaper for you than putting fossil fuels through the machines in your home. But not everyone in New Zealand can get access to finance. That's the next big point, right, is that 47% of all New Zealanders live in rental properties. There is a massive split incentive that exists between the landlord and the tenant. The tenant would benefit from the operational savings, but the landlord would have to pay for the upfront cost. Now, there are new finance structures coming out that I can sort of share with you around some of the ideas. How do we make it an easy decision for the landlord? But also, there are plenty of homeowners in New Zealand that are now living paycheck to paycheck that couldn't dream of getting more debt on their mortgage to go ahead and do this. So how is it that we can bring those people along, you know, along the journey as well? So that's a big important one. But the second one is we do not have a lot of efficiencies in this country around electrifying, you know, ripping the gas out of homes and electrifying those homes. There is a big knowledge gap. And that's something else that we really have to start focusing on is the number of emails I now get from people going, how do I do this? What solar installer do I talk to? What heat pump is best for my home? You know, how do I get gas out? This disconnection fee is really high. Does this really check out for me with four kids? We need to build a knowledge base in New Zealand around that. And one of the things that we're now doing at Rewiring Aotearoa is trying to track down all the people that have already been on this journey. And through that journey, the storytelling that we can get from that journey is really significant. So if you are one of these people listening today, our website's rewiring.nz, and we'd just love to hear your story. You might be halfway through, you might be all the way through, but if you're on this journey and you can share the insights that you've learned along the way and the mistakes that you've made, that is going to give a lot more people a lot more confidence to go down this path. So those are the two things. Fix the finance. Really make sure everyone understands the economics of the stuff and really make it an easy yes for the customer. And that's what we've got to do in the next sort of 2 to 3 years to make sure by 2030 we've replaced millions of small fossil fuel machines.
Yeah, you mentioned the 47% of people who are renting and this fundamental problem, which is that the potential installer of the solar panels and owner of the solar panels and the batteries and the heat pumps and the like is the landlord, but they don't get the benefits of the lower costs of the using the energy. And vice versa, if you're the tenant, it makes no sense to pay for the solar panels and the batteries if you get kicked out after 6 months. So that sounds like a fundamental block. So is there some clever financial arrangements to jump over that or what?
The great thing is we can simply look overseas to see the way that this has been solving. Now, I'm not necessarily say a overseas solution is going to be perfect for New Zealand. There's all different reasons that it might not be. But we can at least take the idea and build on that idea. And one of the things that is coming out of Australia at the moment is this concept of what we call a property contingent loan. And essentially what that means is that there's no upfront capital cost to the landlord or the homeowner. They can install solar panels. They are now on a loan indexed to inflation, maybe indexed to inflation plus 1% that is paid back when the property changes hands. So at the liquidation point, and therefore also covering those upfront expenses with the potential capital gains of the property.
And is that something that a government would have to get involved in? Because what you're talking about there is someone guaranteeing the process.
I think so. I think it needs to be government policy, but the exciting thing is it doesn't necessarily have to be taxpayers' money. It is just a new financial mechanism. Now, there's a lot of things that we could go into here around, you know, whether it is taxpayers' money doing the lending, whether it is the taxpayer underwriting the debt to keep the interest rate low, you know, maybe it is completely private debt, but it's just an option. There are lots of different options that we can look at. There's 1,000 different ways to skin a cat. But the point is all we have to do is think slightly differently about the financing of it. And if you look at the landlord example, all of a sudden the landlord's paying nothing up front for what should be a more desirable rental home that probably the other key part of this is that when we sell homes, I think we should seriously be looking at not what the energy efficiency rating of a home is, but what is the cost to run a home to maintain what we would expect to be a classic New Zealand lifestyle. You've got to be warm, you've got to be dry, right? So what is the cost of running a home? And that should have, the lower the cost, the higher the value of the rent and the higher the value of the property. And I think one of the things that we're now starting to see is that fully electric homes are becoming more desirable in the market because there is actually quite a journey that you have to go on. So if you've already been on that journey and you can buy a home that journey has already been on, that's actually a really desirable situation to be in. And it all goes back to the same thing. It's like it was never in your best interest now to build a new building that doesn't have electric machines. And I think that's something that we really have to get across the construction industry is that not every New Zealander knows this yet, but they will know this within a couple of years.
And is there the entrepreneurial activity happening in the background? Because, you know, that big gap between 8 cents a kilowatt hour and 30-something cents a kilowatt hour is an opportunity for a consumer, but also for businesses. Because, you know, if you're talking, nearly $20,000 a year as the average energy cost for a household, you know, that's a good 15% of the economy. You know, this is a huge chunk of business activity where people who, you know, don't have a business right now could, in theory, in 10, 20 years' time, if they get it right, have a really substantial business providing, servicing, the equipment, the expertise to electrify all these homes, because they are hardly the percentage who are currently have solar and batteries is low single digits from memory. Yep. So there's a huge opportunity for businesses too. Is that action happening?
I think so. Like, how do you make it an easy yes for the customer? So I would challenge large shop owners, large retailers in New Zealand, how is it that we get customers walking into your shop floor, designing a solar system with your staff on the floor, getting that solar system ordered and making it easy for the customer to then get that installer shows up one day, installs it, they trust it, they know that it's safe, and they can fall back on a large brand. So that would be one way that we could, that we could achieve that. And I just think, like, there is an awesome amount of opportunity to accelerate this. We've seen some other really good startups come out in New Zealand that are doing all sorts of things around either leasing to own solar systems, so there's no upfront capital cost, or maybe it's not leasing to own, but you get a cheaper electricity rate by installing the solar system. And they're great, but the issue is they still don't solve the problem of one of our key values at Rewiring Aotearoa is that no one gets left behind in this energy transition.
That's one of the risks, isn't it? That the only people who can afford the big chunks of capital to do this are the ones who are already relatively wealthy, probably own their own home and therefore can control the process. But they're actually quite wealthy. They don't actually absolutely need the savings.
What we're learning from Australia is if you put people on a bell curve where you've got the incredibly wealthy at one end and the incredibly disadvantaged at another end. The ones that are installing solar and electrifying their homes are in the two quartiles that sit around the hump of that bell curve. When you get too wealthy and you're just driving Maseratis and whatever it is, you do not care about the price of energy. You're not motivated. On the other side, you have low-income, vulnerable communities that cannot afford to do this. And so that's really what our goal is that no one should be left behind unless they do so by choice. So one of the other big things that I will add to this is that when we're ever talking to anybody about electrification, we tend to sometimes create enemies. And I don't mean it in an enemy sense that, we don't like each other individually, but with the narrative starts to create enemies because there is a lot of times that people, you're talking about things that people truly love, So how do we make sure that a motorsport enthusiast is still on track to electrify? How do we make sure that a chef that loves cooking with gas is still going to electrify? And the easiest way to do that, I've come up with something, is just, I just want you to electrify everything you don't love, right? Because that's the economic decision. Whereas if you own a car and you take that down to the racetrack once a week, me trying to argue the economics of decarbonization is never going to fly with you. But actually, your water heater, man, come on, you don't want that. That's costing you way too much money. Don't you want more fossil fuels for your car? Don't you want to spend more money on that and save on the things that you don't love? And that's been really, really effective of sort of breaking into, other aspects of, the New Zealand sort of psyche around how it is that we can talk about this stuff quite comfortably.
Mm. So what are the sort of interventions, nudges that government, councils, industry bodies could make to accelerate this? Because the faster we get there, the cheaper it is.
Well, imagine if you could tell a landlord, okay, the water heater in the home that you rent out to people has broken. You have two choices. You can either get an electric option that you do not have to pay for now and will pay for when you sell the home indexed to inflation, maybe with a small profit margin for the lender, fine. Or you pay for this one up front at probably full finance, because let's admit it, most landlords have financing. They're choosing not to pay down their loans, so therefore they are paying for this machine at 5.5%. And you ask me what the easier decision is for the landlord, I think they're always going to go for the electric option at the lower sustainable finance that they don't have to pay anything for up front, right? And I think that's the kicker there, is that really some people will be in a position to electrify their whole lives now. I was one of them. I electrified 21 machines on my farm and have what I think is the world's first fully electric farm. But I had the advantage, just like what we talked about, the new build scenario, I had the advantage that I had started with a blank canvas and I could do that and I could do those decisions really quickly. But most people are not in that situation. So the lever, the action point is really, well, the next time one of your machines breaks, we need to make sure that that machine is the one coming through next is electric.
Just finally, thinking about the political economy behind this, the psychology that businesses and people have that stops them from doing sensible things. So I'm quite interested in behavioral economics and why it is we do dumb things when the obvious thing is to do something that's the cheapest or the cleanest. But actually, we find it quite difficult to change. There is a sunk cost fallacy often with things that we have. There is a bias in favour of the status quo, which means that we find it difficult to even think about changing. And of course, then you've got the economic interests of, you know, there's a lot of money invested in these electricity networks and these electricity generators in these fossil fuel burning plants. The last thing you want to do is encourage the competition to compete away the market you've spent a lot of time and effort building up. So, you know, there are lots of ways in which the status quo can throw sand in the gears and accidentally on purpose not get out of the way.
And I think what I get most excited about overall, and also probably the biggest threat to the energy system at the same time, is that customers now have an alternative that sits outside the system, right? And that alternative is solar and batteries, which have plummeted in price and are now at a point where they're economically viable for every household in New Zealand to do that if they are able to do that. We have a narrative at the moment in New Zealand that we need to spend $30 to $40 billion on infrastructure upgrades to handle the electrification of everything. And that's a really scary situation we find ourselves in. Our power bills don't exactly express this, but the answer is who pays for the poles and wires? It's the customer. So if we're paying for our poles and wires, the cost of the delivered energy electricity in this country is only going to go up. And it's already, we're comparing 6 cents rooftop solar with 34 cents from the grid, or 25 cents if you look at what the volume costs are, because one of the things that we really do encourage is for people to stay on the grid. So it's probably a fairer comparison is 6 cents to 25 cents because you'll have to pay your fixed grid cost connections regardless. But it's still really significant. And if that price goes up, you know, some pundits are saying that will double, well, then all of a sudden we're going to be in a situation where customers will decide to leave the grid. Those that can afford to leave the grid will decide to leave the grid. And we will end up with a copper wire moment of the New Zealand electricity system because we haven't taken into account the needs of the customer. And so everybody at the moment are talking about the need to invest in huge amounts of infrastructure. And I'm definitely not anti-infrastructure investment because we do need better infrastructure in New Zealand. And I'm 100% behind that. But the counterfactual to the argument that we need to build out $30 to $40 billion is actually, no, the customer can do it themselves.
And they don't need a resource consent to do it.
They don't need a resource consent, 100%. And we talk often about grid-scale electricity and we talk about residential solar. We've forgotten the people that sit in the middle, which can roll out massive medium-scale solutions, which is something that I think we should be very proud of in this country. It's farmers who are also owner-operators. And the reason I think this is such an awesome opportunity for New Zealand is the most expensive place to get the power to is rural New Zealand. So imagine if farmers can sort of supply their communities with a lot of cheaper electricity. That's only going to be a good thing socially. We have 35% rooftop solar penetration in Australia now, but we only have 2% rooftop solar penetration at the commercial level in Australia. And the reason is the split incentive between the landlord and the tenant. In New Zealand, one of our biggest industries is agriculture, and the people that make up the agricultural industry are largely owner-operators. They can roll out medium-scale solutions without the need for consents because it's their land and they can make the decisions to do that. And I think that's an incredible opportunity for New Zealand. We're talking about the need to double the amount of renewable energy on the grid. I actually think it's probably higher than that. I think it could probably be, you know, anywhere between 2.5 and 3 times. What we aren't talking about is the customers are going to generate a lot of that energy themselves and consume it themselves. So the grid, the demand is actually going to be lower than what we think it is. So when I talk 2 to 2.5 to 3 times, I'm talking about the total electricity consumed, but much of that electricity will be self-consumed. But then there is also the incredible opportunity that the rest of the electricity that isn't self-consumed can be shared. One of the things I'm very excited about is we're starting to see some feedback tariff opportunities happening now with a couple of the utility providers in New Zealand where they're going to start paying customers to export power back to the grid from their batteries during peak periods as a way of offsetting the need for infrastructure upgrades. If we can roll that out across the country, then we don't have to spend $30 billion on infrastructure and batteries become bankable in every home. And I think that's also a remarkable situation that we could all aim for.
Mike, it's lovely to talk to you. As much because it's an opportunity to save money in an area where so much of the debate has been framed around increased cost and pain, when maybe there's a few bits of gain to be made. Mike Casey, the CEO of Rewiring Aotearoa. Thanks again for being on When the Facts Change.
Thank you very much. And if you get the chance, please go to our website, have a read of our report. I'd love to know what you think.
When the Facts Change was brought to you by the Spinoff Podcast Network, together with KiwiBank. Visit kiwibank.co.nz to find out how KiwiBank are making Kiwi better off.
Talo for Lover. I'm Madeline Chapman, editor at The Spinoff. If you have the means, consider supporting our high-quality journalism by becoming a Spinoff member. Sign up now at thespinoff.co.nz/donate.
The Spinoff Podcast Network.